This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod. We're coming to you live from my office where I need to water my plant because it's dying. But thrilled to be here with you this morning. And I'm begging your patience this morning because we've got a big, big show for you. And my elevator is not going all the way to the top. So I don't know if the rest of you have been having that kind of a summer where it just feels like you're moving through a fog. But I'm having that morning this morning and just being honest about it. Thrilled to be here. The chat is open. By the way, today is Tuesday, the 14th of June. 2022. Now, normally on Tuesdays, we come to you with Ask Dr. Doreen, and we have Dr. Doreen Grandpichet with us, and she's not able to be with us here today. And so graciously, our guest that we had scheduled for tomorrow agreed to be with us today. And we've got a big, big show for you today, talking about some of the biggest things that there are to talk about with two, count them two. I feel like that old Doublemint commercial, two, count them two guests that are absolutely amazing. So excited to be here with you. The chat is now open. We'd love to hear from you. Want to know who's watching, who's in the house. You know, I love to know where you're watching from. I'm geographically challenged, and this helps me to learn where things are. I didn't know where Belize was until recently, and now I know. And I'm excited to know. tell us where you're watching from or the closest major city. That always helps us. And we encourage you to participate in the conversation. Ka is watching from California. So thrilled to have you with us, Ka. So we are live right now on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and about a dozen other places. Traven will start to show those to you on the screen. Don't forget that we're live, but we know that a lot of you, in fact, the vast majority of you watch us in podcast. We are the number one rated autism podcast worldwide. That's such an honor and a treat. And we are under no illusion that that is due to anyone other than you guys liking us, sharing us, letting other people know. We ask you to continue to do that. If you find something here that works for you and that you like, please give us a like or a share or subscribe to our newsletter, which we have not been doing, but we're about to start doing again very soon so that you can know who's coming. Parker's in the house. So thrilled to have. It's not a rerun, Parker. Your days are not mixed up. I was just saying that normally Dr. Grandpichet is here with us on Tuesdays, but she's going to be here tomorrow. Today, I've got two incredible guests for you. So you're going to want to stay, but we are live right now, Parker. And I just approve that today is Tuesday. I always check the date, the 14th of June, because there's a lot of shows now where I say, Parker, we are live, but it's recorded and we aren't, right? But we are. Christina's with us this morning. How are you? Give your little a hug for us, okay? Thrilled that you guys are in the house with us this morning. Sharon Aragon is with us, ready to learn strategies for eloping. Okay, well, least restrictive environment and versus safety. Yes, it's a hard one, right? So we are going to be talking about that. Plus, we have two amazing guests. I also want to remind you, we always invite experts to be here on the show. I've got two amazing experts. I always remind you that I am not one of them. I am a proud, proud parent, a former educator. And you know what they say, once an educator, always. You can see the teacher in me, right? That sometimes I bring my glasses down and give people a look, right? So I want to learn, and I think the best teachers want to learn. I always want to have that front row seat in the classroom and have my hand raised to volunteer because I want to learn. Why do I care so much about this community? Because I'm a pony. I'm a parent of a neurodiverse individual. There's a big discussion about the difference between neurodiverse and divergent right now that I'm not in agreement with. What else is new? And Christina says sensory input needs are high lately, LOL. Well, you know, that makes sense though, doesn't it? Because you just have had a change in schedule and, you know, not going to the same classroom that we were going to before. And anytime there's this, you know, as a person, I have sensory issues, not to the point of having a diagnosis. So I can only ever put it through my filter and go, okay, it must be worse for our kids. Right. And boy, I, you know, you change anything on me and I can't remember anything. I'm like, what's happening right here? And I get overwhelmed very easily. Right. So if I'm like that, what must it be like for our kids who finally get in a groove? They're in a classroom. Okay. I know this is what we do today. And so I can manage the sensory things because I know what to expect. And then the schedule changes. Right. So makes total sense. Right. And Parker says there are self-advocates out there that believe that parents are not a part of the autism community. I don't know why people think that. Well, I can understand why people think that, honestly, Parker. I totally understand and respect that because I think that there are different levels. I picture this sort of like a solar system, right? And the sun is the center and everything revolves around the sun. And for me, the sun is people who are on the autism spectrum. And I can't understand what it is like to be them. I'm not ever going to understand that as hard as I try and as much as I learn and as many times as I raise my hand, I am never fully going to understand what it is like. That doesn't mean that I can't have empathy. That doesn't mean I can't be a good ally. It doesn't mean that I can't be a part of supporting and being joyous and loving that son, right? But I'm never going to understand what it's like to be the son. But I do think that when, and so I think that that's an important distinction to make, but I also think that when people say, well, you can't understand my experience, so you can't be a part of it, that's short-sighted. I do think, and I am learning that it is very important to those people, if you aren't me, don't speak for me. And that sometimes when we talk about autism, that they feel like that's us speaking for them. And I always want to be cognizant and mindful of that, but I don't think that I'm trying to think of a perfect analogy and not liking any of the ones that I come up. I don't think that we should have a hard boundary that unless you are this thing, then you can't have any experience with it, because that is a little short-sighted too. We all have different perspectives, and those different perspectives make up the world, make up everything that we see in art. And I think that perspective is the most fascinating thing. The example I'm going to use is that we do this show and we do it in a format because it's from the way I see things, right? Which is doesn't always jive with how people on the spectrum see things. That's just, we just need to accept that, right? But we started doing Stories from the Spectrum, and I have said to our artists that we have do things for Stories on the Spectrum. And by the way, they get paid. It's not a lot, but they do get paid for their work. And my son, who is a filmmaker, I went to him early on and I said, I really want something that focuses on Wyatt because he's an amazing artist. and Wyatt is not a filmmaker right now in his life. So that's not where, that's not what he's pursuing. Not that he can't, but that's not what he's pursuing. So I assigned my son and I said, you know, I want you to go make a film about Wyatt. He goes, well, what is it you want, Mom? And I said, no. I want you to go do it. I want you to make a film and here are the parameters. It needs to be, you know, around this many minutes, but you know, I'll take you over. I'll set up the appointment so that you can see him paint in a couple of different ways, but you tell whatever story you want to tell, dude. You're the filmmaker. You be the artist, right? I'm commissioning a work, but and here's the subject matter, but then you tell the story. And then when I saw what he did, it took my breath away because it wasn't the story that I would have told. It was so much better. And it just proved for me that it's the reason why we're doing Stories from the Spectrum, because we have to allow people to tell their stories in the way that they want to tell them, right? So I do get it why self-advocates go, hey, don't always just listen to the way the parents tell the story. There's another story here. But I don't want us to be cut out entirely because we have our own story to tell. We have our own journey that we're on. And when I was doing my one-woman show, Autism Momologues, there was a young man who came on the spectrum and he was working as my house manager for me. And then he viewed the show. And then afterwards he came up to me and he said, can I ask you something? And I said, sure. And he goes, was that all true? Is that how it felt for you? And I said, well, yeah, I mean, it's a funny comic out there sort of look at it, but yeah, no, that's kind of what it felt like for me. And he was like, interesting. I never would have guessed that. And I thought, wow, look at that. You know, that's pretty amazing because I always want to know what it's like for those of you on the spectrum. I don't think that a lot of people on the spectrum have asked me what it is like for me. I get it. I understand why, but I understand. I digressed and we have guests. We have two guests. I can't be taking all this much time, but I love the conversation that you guys have going on and we're going to cycle back to some of that. So, let's take a look right now. We like to start the show with something we fondly refer to as jargon of the day. You guys have seen what the jargon is today. It's a doozy, right? It's one that takes our breath away. So let's get to it. Our term today is elopement. And you know that what we like to do sometimes, we give you the actual definition, we make fun of it when it's appropriate. There's no making fun of this one. And then we give you a working definition so that you can hopefully begin to understand what it is, right? And then I usually try to give you some context. So here's the thing. This word is the very reason why we do jargon of the day, because sometimes you see a word and you go, well, I think I know what that means. And I don't know about you, but when I first saw elopement and people were talking to me about elopement, I was like, well, are you worried that when he's 17, he's going to take, you know, go off with some girl and go to Niagara Falls and get married? I'm not worried about that today, right? If that happens when he's 17, 18, you know, whatever, we'll deal with it. But, you know, he's 3. Why are you guys so concerned about elopement? That's where my head seriously was. Not making a joke. I really thought that that's what they were talking about when people run away to get married. It's not. This is a matter of life and death. So let's take a look at what our actual definition for elopement is. When an individual with cognitive challenges or special needs wanders, runs away from, or leaves a safe environment without notice or permission. This is an actual definition. It's not my favorite. I sort of hate the part that says with cognitive challenges or special needs, right? But what it's trying to get at here is that this is someone who requires support in the day-to-day environment. So somebody, you know, who requires support, wanders, runs away from, or leaves a safe environment without notice or permission. I think that that's pretty clear. I think that we can all like get a picture of this, but let's take it down a notch. Let's look at what our working definition for this is. It's running away. And even that is imperfect for me because it might be running too. And this is part of the thing that I really want to drive home is that when people leave a safe environment, there's always a reason. We just may not understand what the reason is. When my son was little, if you put him down on, even before he could walk, he thought he could run and he wanted to run. And he, you know, he was a very small baby, not big enough to stand on his own legs. And if you had put him down, he thought that he could walk. And he would just plots on his face, right? But it was what he wanted to do. So as soon as he could walk, I mean, he walked for 3 seconds and then he ran. And if you touched his feet to ground anywhere, he would run. And I used to say, I think it's that he likes the feel of the wind in his ears, because he was like Forrest Gump. He would just run, 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 run. And it was a thing. And man, it was hard. That is not all individuals, right? There are some individuals that will run away from a loud noise. And there are other individuals who will run towards water because they like to see the water. They like the colors on the water. They like the feel of the water, or they like the pressure when they're in water, right? There's a lot of reasons why people leave a safe environment, because they're running to something, or they're running away from something, or they enjoy the experience of running. We can't leave that out of the conversation, right? There is a reason. But here's the problem. When people elope and they do not have the support that they needed in the safe environment, they are now without support. And the world is often harsh to them because they may not understand the rules of the environment, which means they might run out in front of a car, or they run into water, not realizing I can't swim for more than 30 seconds without my floaties, and I don't have my floaties with me. Right. And so we're going to be talking today, and I know we all have to steel ourselves, but we're going to be talking with an expert in just a few minutes about this subject. Do you know that the number one cause of death for individuals on the autism spectrum is drowning? And guess what the number and it's drowning from when they have eloped, by the way. And do you know what the number two cause of death is? It's being hit by a car when they elope. So far and away, the biggest cause of death is elopement. And I am haunted, especially this time of year, by, you know, we've had Dr. Jonathan Tarbox on the show with us. He used to be on all the time, and we just had him on a couple of weeks ago, but he says brilliant things, brilliant man. But one of the things that he said that haunts me to this day is that he said, for every parent that's out there that has a kiddo that needs significant support and does not know safety rules by heart 100% all the time, I want you to picture that your child, your beautiful child that you love more than anything else, stares you right in the eye and says, the very first time that there's any opportunity, I'm going to run into danger. And that if your child were to look you in the eye and say that, what would you do? And you should do that today. That is what you should do today, whatever that is. Now, it's different for a lot of different people, but the point here is to take every single precaution, because the statistics, excuse me, are not good. And just this morning, there was another story of a kiddo that they found in the water drowned because they eloped, and while they were looking for him, he drowned. We've seen this story way, 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 way too many times. It's not a problem that's easily solved, but thank goodness I have a doctor who's going to be with us in just a few minutes. Doctor, and I just totally forgot what her first name is, but it's Dr. Kemp. Dr. Kemp is going to be with us in just a minute, and she's going to be talking with us about things that we can do. So hold on to that thought for a minute. We're not going to leave you high and dry on this. We're going to give you some things to actually do. Okay, so moving on to our question of the day, because this is going to go right hand in hand with our expert. We want to know from you guys, do you have fears about elopement? And if you don't, it's because you're 100% sure that your child has gone through such extensive training that they now understand the rules wherever they go. Can I tell you that my biggest fear was that I would never be in that category, that I would never be able to like go someplace and not fear my son running away and being in danger. I thought that my whole life was going to be that, and it isn't. It isn't. And I really couldn't see how it would ever be, but I can tell you that I don't have that fear anymore. And it hasn't been that long. quite honestly, my son just turned 19 and it hasn't been that long, but I know that I can go to a ginormous venue and I can, you know, be talking to my son. And I know that, you know, he's not going to elope or disappear, that if he's going to go, you know, he's very respectful of me as the person with him. And he'll say, I'm going to go over there for a while. If we get lost, I'm going to meet you here. You know what I mean? Which is an amazing thing. So I want to put hope in your pocket that, because when he was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, even, I was like, that's not going to happen. But it can. It takes an awful lot of work. Okay. So write in and tell us. And Parker says, I have fear for every kid on the spectrum. Kidnapping are a thing as well. We need to teach autistic kids about stranger danger as well as teaching them how to swim. Amen to that, Parker. Amen to that. And you can. My son was taught stranger danger. I've talked about this extensively on the show about the trainings that they put him through. And the day that, you know, we'd gone through all these different things, and the day that they had it set up, and there were people all over a Walmart, and my husband was there, and my husband was instructed to walk away from my son. And they had a person who's a therapist playing an actor role who went up and said, hey, I've got a puppy in the car that needs to be fed. Can you help me? And to see what my son would do. Woo, right? But he passed with flying colors. So you can teach your kids. And that goes for all of our kids, right? But keep writing in. Okay, our topic this week, really important to me, that we're still talking about seeing whole individuals. And this is a part of it. We need to see that these are people, our kiddos who are loping are people who want to go to something or away from something. We, you know, we've covered Romario Snow on this show before, who has eloped a couple of times. One time he was missing for 27 days because he was in a store and they were playing something on the TV that was violent. And his mom was saying to the shop owner, can you please turn that off? But before they could do it, Romario ran out the door, and he ran as hard as he could because he wanted to get away from that. And by the time he realized, he's a runner, he's a marathon runner. And by the time he realized, I don't know where I am, his mom didn't know where he was either for 27 days, right? We need to see these people as whole people who have sensory needs that they run to and sensory needs that they run away from. And we cannot start to work on elopement without thinking about those kinds of things. Okay. Dr. Kemp is here with us. And so I don't want to belabor this too much because I want to bring her in. Dr. Kemp is a pediatric occupational therapist and assistant professor in the School of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences at Ohio State University. She has expertise in sensory integration. I know you guys are going to love that. Feeding and aquatics, which feeds her clinical teaching and research in adaptive sports. Dr. Kemp's primary professional interest area of interest is supporting students and educators in the use of evidence-based practice, as well as innovative ways to push occupational therapy into the community. She's here with us today to talk specifically about the number one cause of death in our kiddos on the autism spectrum. So let's please welcome Dr. Erica Kemp.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so thrilled to have you here. And thank you for being so willing and changing the date at the last minute. We completely appreciate you.
Sure. Yeah, not a problem.
So we do jargon of the day every day, and we just did our jargon today was elopement, because I thought, well, that's going to feed real well into the topic that we're talking about with you. I want to talk about swimming broadly with you, because I know that there's a wide variety of things that you can talk about here, because obviously one of the things that we can do is teach them how to swim, right? But let's talk about what some of the challenges are around water all the way around from your point of view as an expert.
Well, I think that, you know, just as you, right before you brought me in, you were talking about it, right? These sensory aspects of swimming. So many people in general love the feel of the pressure of the water on their bodies. The reflection is gorgeous, especially if you are outside. Why do I see a cloud in the water? Why do I see a tree in the water? What happens when I throw a rock in the water, right? So there's all these aspects that draw people of all types and ages and diagnoses to the water, but particularly we find our autistic children are drawn to water. The problem then comes in if they don't have the basic skills to swim. That's the first one. But then also just that safety awareness in an aquatic environment. And you know, what happens if I step into a lake? What happens if I get too close to the edge of a pool? And it's just so individualized, I think, to each kid, each person, as to what they need to be safe in an aquatic environment.
But I think talk to us a little bit about, there are skills that we can be teaching our kids so that they do have, for instance, the gross motor skills to be able to demonstrate those in a water situation, correct?
Right. So there's a lot of things that we can work on with our kids. So teaching them how to get in and out of a pool, making sure they have the upper body strength and the coordination to use a ladder, right? And so you can do that in and out of a pool. You can also work on climbing a step stool in the house, right? There's other ways to teach them that motor and then helping generalize over. You mentioned flotation earlier, and I think that that's an interesting thing to think about. Do you teach your kid to swim with or without flotation? Most kids, as they get exposure to swimming, they're going to use a bicycle kick first. Mm-hmm. And that may not be a very efficient kick to move through the water. And so that gross motor piece of how do we teach them to use both legs with their legs in a little bit more of an extended, and do you do that with flotation or not? Because then if they've got that flotation, and that's how they learned, when they get back into a body of water again and they don't have it, that can kind of mess with their body position and understanding of where they are and that motor plan. So kind of thinking about how you teach that that piece of it.
Well, you and your team have created an adaptive swim program. I want you to talk a little bit about it and what are some of the things that you think that are super important. We've had experts here on the show before who have talked about just what you were talking about, the floaty things, and said that it's not their recommendation. You didn't quite go that far, but I'm assuming that that's where your head is. I think it's hard for those of us. I had one swim expert that I remember very distinctly sitting on the show with me as she was in the studio. And she said, you just can't do that. It's the worst thing ever. And I said to her, well, then help me because I'm not a good swimmer. So I'm in the water with my child. And the reason why my kid has floaties is because I'm not a good swimmer. And it was like her head exploded. And she said, oh my goodness, is that the problem? But I think especially, you know, if you're not a good swimmer or you have more than one kid in the pool, getting in the pool with your child from the beginning can be anxiety ridden, and that the floaties give us a false sense of security. So talk about adaptive swim programs that you've developed, why you think they're a good thing, what kinds of things you guys teach, and why you recommend it for parents like me who aren't swim knowledgeable.
Right. So I am an occupational therapist, as you said. So I really believe in this idea of finding the right fit for the child, to the skill, to the family, to the environment. So we have developed, it's an occupational therapy aquatic intervention. So it's therapeutic, and it's different from group swim lessons in that it is individualized. So we do write individual goals for each child. We hold this in a community pool environment. So it looks like a typical pool, which is important. And then as part of this, we make those individualized goals. We do this in a group, so they do have peers to model after. They have this primary relationship with this one swim buddy, is what we call it. And that safety and trust can be built with that individual. So I think doing this, that's one way that it makes it really different from a group swim lesson, is that they have one person they can trust. And we found that adding that really allows us to grade activities a little bit quicker. For each child, we really are focusing on those basic safety skills. So getting in and out of the pool, being able to hold their breath, to go under, to submerge. And that may not be actually blowing bubbles. It might just be that they stop their breath flow and go under, because I think we focus too much on blow the bubbles. Well, I don't know why. Can I go under and come back up without coughing? Did I stop the flow of air? And then some basic floating and being able to turn in their body to come back to the wall. So we take these things and we take these skills and put them at different stations throughout the pool. We individualize each station to each kid. We use a lot of play. Occupational therapists, we love to use play. And it's going to be, so we will have groups that are focused on all around Transformers. And then the next one is all about Disney princesses. And so the types of toys that we use a visual schedule. You know, we use positive reinforcement when we need to. This idea of structured activities within a larger group has really made a big difference for this. And then we also teach that quote unquote hidden curriculum. Who is the lifeguard? Why should you know who the lifeguard is? You know, what type of swimsuits are they wearing? We also do things like orient them to the pool depth, right? So where is the shallow end? Where does the depth start to get a little bit deeper? Because most drownings tend to happen where it just goes over their head, where they just realize, oh, that was too deep. So we orient both the parents and the kids to that as well. And then, you know, sounds can be really tough in a pool environment. So working with whistles and bells or whatever it is that, you know, the, and we work with the families on this, where are you going to go? What kind of pool are you going to be at? And we find out, well, do they use whistles? Do they have a bell? Do they have a sound system? And kind of layer in some of those sensory challenges on top of all of this.
And I think a lot of times people, because there are so many different aspects to this sensory wise, it becomes one of those things that gets relegated to the back burner. You know, we're not going to work on the swimming thing because we're working on the speech or we're working on this. When in fact, you're working on a lot of different skills in the pool that have a global effect on everything that the child does. Talk a little bit about the things that you already have talked a little bit, but talk some more about some of the things that you teach. And then tell us some of the success stories that you've seen about how this transfers to other things as well, Dr. Kemp.
Yeah, I really believe that sensory integration is a core piece that we all need to work on. You know, you can't move without understanding your environment. You can't react emotionally, cognitively without understanding your environment. So we do use a lot of sensory approaches in the pool. And, you know, we see overall confidence blooms with so many children once they have mastered sort of this motor skill or this sensory masterful of being able to do something. So, you know, we have kids that are now doing synchronized swim teams that would have never put their head underwater. And now they're on a synchronized swim team. We've also had kids move on to like an adaptive inclusive swim team, like for stroke development. We've had people that have been able to then go to a typical community swim lesson after they figured out how this works and what this might look like and got some of that basic comfort with the water. They were able to go right back into their community, which is another great thing. You know, there's a time and a place for a therapeutic intervention. And then there's a way for us to move kids into where they should be in the communities. So we've had a lot of different success with those types of things.
Now, and you're doing research on this as well, correct?
I am, yeah.
And your initial research has been, you know, what I'm hearing is that it's really great that the program is working and that it's helping in lots of different areas. So what's the next step now for the research? What happens next?
So we've put 17 kids through this feasibility study to see, does this work? Does this work for parents? Do the parents like it? Do the kids like it? And the overwhelming response has been, I don't want it to stop. You know, the kids talk about swimming all day to their parents on the day that they get to come. You know, the feasibility has been shown. So we did just receive funding from the American Occupational Therapy Foundation to put another 36 kids through to make sure that this is tweak our protocol a little bit, add another measure for swim skills in, add some more engagement measures. And hopefully the goal when we finish this study, we should have a manualized protocol and a fidelity measure that any other site should be able to pick up and follow. Because I don't want this just to be here in Columbus, Ohio, right? We want this to be available. It's really hard to find adaptive lessons, right? And some of the, you know, there are so many reasons why, but my hope is that if we can have this protocol and fidelity measure, that this could be reproduced kind of across the country.
Well, that feeds right into some of the questions that they're writing online. People are saying, I mean, I didn't know that there was such a thing as an aquatic OT. I'm going to be honest with you. Although when we would get to the summer, it took us a lot of years to discover this, but one year we got to the summer and they offered us for the OT to meet my son in the pool. twice a week. And I was like, was that always a thing? Was that a thing that we could have done during the summer months? I didn't know to ask for it. So I don't know if it was new or it had been there and they just weren't telling me, but I'm putting it out there for people. Call your school and say, is there a possibility to continue our OT in the pool? But for people who are writing in and saying, you know, we're asking our local YMCA to do this, or I live in a rural area and there isn't much, what kinds of things do you suggest for those families, Dr. Kemp?
Well, I think, you know, reaching out to your local community, whatever pool is there, and working with them about it. And, you know, a lot of times private lessons will work with someone who understands swimming. And then if you as a parent can educate that person on what works best for your child, how do they learn best? I think that's what we are really trying to tap into, is each kid is different. And so how does each kid learn? I've had one kid that learned by watching somebody else, and that's how she learned. I've had someone else that we've had to kind of motor them through. Then there's other ones where you have to I don't want to say trick, but use play to elicit that movement and repeat that over and over until they figure that out. So I think it's about you as a parent knowing, how does my kid learn best? And then finding someone that has that understanding of how do we go from basic safety, scared of the water, or maybe seeking and jumping in, right? And how do we teach that motor skill?
Amazing. So if somebody, I know I'm really jumping the gun here because you're at a place in your research, but if somebody, for instance, finds a swim teacher or a local pool and there's an OT there and they start having the conversation and they realize, okay, this person would like some more information, doesn't have it, are you at a point where you have things that you could share with them? Could people write to you and you could share some important information? Are you not there yet?
I am happy to talk, especially if they have an OT in their area. I'm happy to connect with that OT. I am starting sort of a list of people interested in this, so that as we get to that next phase, we can kind of push this out a little bit quicker. I'm happy to answer emails.
So school has just ended in a lot of places, you guys. If you're not having OT over the summer, but you normally have it during the school year, it may be that, you know, you had the opportunity in your IEP, or they just sort of glossed over that, but it wouldn't hurt to send an email and to the OT and say, is this available? You know, what kinds of things would you be doing? And then start the conversation, because I find that good educators want to learn more, and maybe they would be interested in some of the things that Dr. Kemp is talking about.
Yeah, I think occupational therapists are a hidden gem. And so getting to know and love, whether that's through your school or through a private practice in your area, definitely, or an OT or OT assistant even would be a great match for something like this as well.
I find that OTs are one of the great misunderstood factions of the autism community. And part of it is that I think because so much of it has gone through the school, and there are some amazing OTs out there that I think can make a ginormous difference in every single program. But there are OTs that are strictly following school guidelines and saying, we're just going to do this. And I think as parents and for our audience, our parents and our people that are on the spectrum, we have to push and ask for more things, because the bucket is deeper than we know that it is.
And I think you're right about the skills in the pool carry over in so many ways. You know, we can address all kinds of goals in the pool. And if your school has a swim module in the PE curriculum, then OT could potentially help them access that specially designed curriculum. But it depends on the school.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, our school didn't have a pool at the school. There was no school in our district that had a pool at the school. But during the summer, the city gave them access during specific hours that it was only for the use for the school for OT. Who knew? I didn't know. Who knew? So ask, don't be afraid to ask. Now, Parker wanted to know, where I live, there are rivers and lakes everywhere. Would this kind of adaptive swim class help with that?
Yes, I think it would, because rivers are a little bit different. You'd want to think about also making sure that wherever you do some swimming is going to involve training around a current, right? So a lazy river or some water slides or something like that, because you do have that piece. But lakes, you know, any body of water where a child would need to understand which way is up, you know, they've been submerged, they've fallen in, they've tripped over a rock, which way is up, and then to be able to either turn on their backs to breathe, and then be able to cite the land to get back. So I do think it would help, because you can't fence in every river and lake, right?
No.
Which is kind of the other option.
We actually, where my son got his adaptive swim lessons, there was a week where they, first they taught them the skills of flipping over on their back and going to the side of the pool. But then, and they warned us ahead of time, they said, we're this entire week, we are going to do that with them in their clothes and shoes. And so that they will know, even if they're in their clothes and shoes, how to do it, because it feels different. There's a different sensory issue. Is that something that you recommend, Dr. Kemp, or not?
I think that's a great thing. Once your kid has those skills, is to then do it, A, without goggles, because a lot of kids wear goggles for the sensory protection on their eyes, A, without goggles, and then B, yes, with some clothes and shoes on. And that way they know how to do that, because it does feel weird, and it's heavy, and it's cold.
Yeah. Yep. And they did it over and over. And he thought it was great because they made it a game, and he was fully clothed and he was like, what's happening? And they'd, like I said, they'd already taught him the skills, but then they would pick him up and throw him in the pool. And so he was like, oh, this is great. And there was a cheering team so that when he could turn himself over and get back to the edge and pull himself out, everybody would cheer. He thought it was fantastic. And I sat there and cried thinking, I hope he never needs to use this skill.
Right.
Yeah.
Someone in the chat put the infant swim rescue, and that's another great program, especially for the young ones.
There we go. I got to ask you before we let you go, I'm always intrigued by the people that we have on the show and the fact that they've devoted their lives to our kids and to helping them and are so compassionate. And here you are, you're this amazing person. What led you to this profession? What's your why? Why are our kids the thing that drives you?
You know what? I grew up as a swimmer and I loved playing. And when I became a pediatric occupational therapist, I realized there's so much potential for kids to be able to play and for families to go to pools and that sort of thing. So I just love the success stories. I love seeing even the kids that the progress is very slow. You see the joy in the kids, and that makes me very happy.
Well, listen, we just respect and admire you so much. A late question just came. Lori wants to know, my son cannot get the back float. He has issues staying there on his back in swim lessons. How do we get past this?
Yeah, he probably has, my guess is he has some vestibular, some movement sensitivities. And so I would think about working on some of that on land as much as you can and taking it very slowly. But you can also just really work on treading water in an upright, almost getting a front float with the head up. If they won't go on their back, then that's the next thing we go towards. Can we do sort of a side or a front float with the head elevated? And it's interesting. Kids, once they learn to kind of relax, let their bodies go, it will eventually come. But back float can be tough because of that movement piece.
Can I ask, because I love the sensation of floating on my back, but I'm somebody who has lots of inner ear issues and I get dizzy and I can't stand it when I have swimmer's ear with the water in my ear. I cannot stand it. So I won't float on my back because sometimes water gets in my ear. Is there something that you recommend that will keep water out of it? Because I'm wondering, maybe some of our kids have this issue too, because it's the most unpleasant feeling in the world when you have that water stuck in your ear. Ugh.
I agree. It is awful. You know, if kids will tolerate wax earplugs, they mold really nicely. They also can help keep noise down in a pool environment. So that's one thing to try. You know, after ear tubes, a lot of kids will wear those kinds of things.
Okay, so the wax, and somebody else said silicone. I don't know about these, but I'm going to check them out. All right, fantastic. Dr. Kemp, tell us where people can find, you know, if somebody's living in Columbus, Ohio, how would they find your program?
Yeah, so we do have a website that's under development. And so I'll just kind of, should I put it in the chat or do you want me just to say it?
Oh, no, because they don't get your
chat. Yeah, okay. So it's the letter U. .osu for Ohio State University .edu / and it's aquatic AQUOTIC, or they can also email me and it's just my first name .last name @osunc.edu.
Okay. Erica with a K. Kemp with a K.
Yeah.
For those that are listening in podcast, in audio only. One last question, because then we have to get to our next guest. My son will not put his head in the water. What would be the next step? He only swims with his life jacket. He's 7 years old.
So I would do a lot of splashing toleration or dumping and pouring and see if he can just get used to the water on his head. And then all just very slowly chin to lips. You can kiss the water. You can paint your face with the water. You know, anything just to build up tolerance slowly, slowly.
There we go. Make it worth his while too. They want to know, do you have an Instagram?
I don't. That's a good idea.
I mean, I have one, but I don't ever put anything on it. So, all right. Well, everybody's on it. So maybe that's the next horizon. Dr. Kemp, thank you so much for being with us. We've enjoyed this so much. I hope you have a wonderful summer in the pool.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. You take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Our next guest, and we're a little late getting to her, but so thrilled to welcome her back to the show. Sarah Bradford is here. She's otherwise known as S.J. Childs, an amazing children's author, and she's got some really amazing things going on. First of all, she's got her own podcast, which you guys need to be checking out. She's coming for us, and I'm welcoming her coming for us, right? She's got her own network. She's moving and shaking, and she's got an amazing conference that's coming up in August. So let's welcome back to the show, Sarah Bradford.
Hey.
And Amanda already says I have all of her books now. Now, Sarah, we don't have your camera on.
Oh, what the heck?
I don't know. But we can hear you. So in the meantime, I love that Amanda says I have all of her books now. So I don't know where you want to start. Do you want to start talking about your life as an author? You want to start talking about your podcast network, or do you want to talk about the 1 in 44 conference?
Oh, gosh.
There's a lot.
Thank you so much for having me back. First of all, I mean, let me tell you, you were my mentor in this project, getting this podcast up and running. And, you know, you were actually the first show that I appeared on. And so I just am so grateful for kind of what you've kind of, you know, given me and taught me through this experience. So thank you. And
no, thank you, because that's amazing. I take absolutely no credit, but I love it when people go, you know, I'm going to go do this and do, you know? So I have nothing but respect. You're moving and shaking, girl, about to lap me, which I'm thrilled with. Now, do we still have you? Yeah. Now we've got the picture, but do we have sound? We don't have sound.
Goodness, right?
Now we have sound. Okay. Something was going on, but now we have sound. All right.
I don't need any of this now.
I don't know what's going on. We've got a bunch of background noise. And now say something.
Okay. How about now?
Now we've got you. So we make it work, right?
It was probably just plugging in and unplugging everything, but.
Well, you look great, and I'm thrilled to see you. Tell us everything that you have going on.
Oh my goodness. So the books, I have the children's books still, which have turned into more of a donation to schools and to projects in the community. I haven't put my focus into, you know, marketing as much as I just really want to share them with the families. In fact, I keep a box in my car so that I can give them to kids at the grocery store when I see them crying in the parking lot and things like that. It's fun. And I love to get fidget boxes and keep fidget toys in my purse too, for the same reason, because sometimes just offering that little bit of understanding and, it is so nice. Okay. I'm going to do what Travis is asking me to do here.
Okay. So we're playing with the audio just a little bit. Okay.
How about now?
Now we've got you. I don't know what was going on before, but it was crazy fun. But great. And so, and we see behind you, you've got that beautiful sign, the SJ Child Show. Talk to us about that.
So that evolved from the author name, S.J. Childs. I thought, well, while we're up and running with S.J. Childs, let's just continue on with it. And, you know, being a guest on, I probably was a guest on about 30 podcasts before I started my own show. And people just saying, this is great. You're great at this. You should be doing this on your own. Start your own show. And I was like, okay, I guess, you know, and my husband invested so much in me. He did all of the setup behind me and purchased dresses for me to have like wardrobe changes. I mean, just amazing support from my family. And it's like you said, it's taken off. I'm at 130 episodes. And wow. In a year, I'm kind of an overachiever when it comes to things of all things. And so,
and you've had some big guests. You've had guests that I can't get.
Oh, shush, you can now. No, you can just come through me.
I can't remember who it was that you had on that I was like, dang, that girl is moving and shaking. You are getting things done.
You.
Tell them like some of your favorite guests. I know they're all
Right? I can't. Sibling episodes are some of my favorite, absolutely, because it shows that love between the autistic individual and their sibling and how much care they have for them. And those ones just are like the most moving. But yeah, I had Temple, which of course you've had Temple on several times. Danny Bowman, who was just on Netflix's Love on the Spectrum. I love Danny. And I'm so grateful that you introduced us. And you introduced us about animation. It wasn't even really about, you know, being a guest or anything. So that was amazing.
I don't even remember that, but that's great.
Yeah. Armani Williams, who is the an autistic race car driver. Anthony Iani, who's an autistic basketball player. Oh my gosh, Scott Steindorf, who was so incredible. He's a Hollywood producer. And his wife, I actually ended up making a really close bond with. And she is a new neurodivergent professor at Arizona State University. So incredible, incredible people. And I mean, I'm just like rolling into all, you know, all of these things and meeting these people all around the world, which I could never have imagined it would be like this. I wish I would have known about this years ago.
Well, but you're here now.
Yes.
And you're creating a new path. And you're not taking any prisoners, which I so respect. And in fact, you are you're having a big summit. Tell them about the 1 in 44
excited.
Summit. I know you can't tell everything right now, but tell them what you can tell them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been so honored and grateful to have gathered 34 presenters, which include some of the world's most renowned autism advocates, self-advocates, autism podcasts that will be having live shows during the summit. It's August 12th and 13th, and it will be a two-day event of just full of autism education. And I chose
Virtual, right, Sarah?
It is. It is virtual. So everyone can attend and it will be available afterwards for review and things. So it'll be fantastic. And the reason I chose the 1 in 44 tour is because the CDC just came out with the new numbers this year. 1 in 44 kids in the U.S. has autism. So I thought that would be really interesting. Actually, my husband, I better give him credit where it's due, came up with, he said, oh, the 1 in 44 tour, you should do that. And so I try to take all of his ideas and run with them as much as possible. So
well,
brilliant, right?
You guys make an amazing team.
Thank you. Well, you know, and you haven't had this information yet, and I'll share with everybody, which is exciting to be able to do so. But, you know, since we last talked, I think that my son and husband did have, both of them have their diagnoses. But since we talked last, my oldest daughter, who's 22, my youngest daughter of 10, and myself, we've all found out that we're all on the spectrum. And it was almost like, what kind of party do we have here? Like, what does an autism cake look like even, right? Anything you want. Potato chips, right? And they had friends on the side.
That means your entire family, have now gotten diagnoses.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
It is. I don't want to get emotional, but I'm going to, but it is the most, it's the most amazing connection it has brought to our family to be able to accommodate and have compassion for one another in different ways than I think we were able to do before. It's a new perspective, and it gives us the ability to really help others see, maybe even, you know, as adults, see, wow, this going through childhood now makes sense, or these type of relationships that I just could never seem to make, you know, groups of women, for example, I could never, you know, fit in with these groups. And I remember my mom asking me, like, why can't you just fit in with all the other kids, or why can't, and I never, you know, expect or had any kind of idea that I was neurodivergent in any way, but it's so fascinating. So yeah, now I can just kind of teach everyone around me that this is also what autism looks like. And so let's learn how to just be kind and compassionate to everyone, because you just don't know when you're meeting someone.
Well, I would imagine that each one of you presents in an entirely different way.
And that makes it so much more exciting to be able to share those experiences with people so that they can see that themselves, so that they can see, wow, you know, our son is, you know, only like 5 or 10% of the autism population who is twice exceptional, who has, you know, 12 going on college professor, and he is, you know, speaks several languages and is like a mathematician and all of these things. And, you know, then we have our daughter, our youngest daughter, who also has dyslexia, which means that all of the learning that our 12-year-old son does looks so different for her with, you know, the struggles that she has to go through. She has this resilient emotional intelligence that I have always just pondered, like, how can you be so young going on grandma? Like, I just don't get it.
Well, I gotta ask you, you know, because we have so many people who write in and say, I'm an adult, and I suspect that maybe I'm on the spectrum, but I don't even know where to go. And a lot of times they will go and sit and talk with the first doctor, and, you know, who was even, we had an expert who was on yesterday who was talking about adults that he knows that the doctor spent 15 minutes with them, did no tests, only talked to them for 15 minutes and said, no, you're not on the spectrum. So how on earth, where did you go? Like, what tips do you have for people in terms of if they want to get a diagnosis?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's so interesting because for my kids, it was through the health department, through the school system. But for my adult, you know, the adults in my life, my adult daughter, it was self-diagnosis for her. So, which is very valid. You know, I just want people to know that. But for me, I went to a place and had a brain scan, a QEEG done, which it's kind of new, and they basically do brain mapping, which shows which patterns of thinking your brain has. And then they match it up with, you know, 100 previous ones that have autism, have ADHD, insomnia, anxiety, kind of the things. And when you go in, like for my personal experience, when I went in, you know, I filled out this huge, you know, 6-page of symptoms, or if you will, and kind of ideas that I had about myself. And then they did the brain scan, and then they did something really interesting after that. It was like a 1-hour reflex assessment. They assessed every reflex that I could have ever had in my body that you're supposed to apparently lose between birth and 3 months old. And if you don't, if you still have these reflexes, then those are signs of the neurodiverse patterns. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's new. And so I'm kind of calling my own personal finding rather than a diagnosis, because it wasn't through a psychiatrist or a psychologist. But it's still, I mean, I still have the map. It shows autism, you know, it shows the ADHD, the anxiety, which I knew, but some things I didn't know, like OCD, like I would never call myself anything like that, except for maybe if you got into my computer and looked at my fancy computer files, but otherwise, you know, everything's a mess, it's chaos here, so with everybody being on the spectrum, it's a different level of chaos in every room.
Can I just say this, though, you know, it's part of it is our experience of it and what it is that I would never have thought about it. I would never have met you and thought about that diagnosis at all. But now that you're telling me this, what it clicks for me is I look at all the things that you've accomplished in a short period of time.
Thank you.
And that often for me is a sign that there's other stuff going on.
Yeah.
Because you can't get the amount of stuff done that you have gotten done in the short period of time that I've known you. Honestly, and I think have one of those typical functioning experiences. I just don't see it happening that way.
I agree.
So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But Lori has written in and said, way better than a color in the circle 1 to 10. And they go off those results, a brain scan. Who knew? Unbelievable. Tell us again what it was called. And can you tell us where you went to get it?
Absolutely. I went to a place, I live in Salt Lake City. And so I went to a place called Bright Minds. And it was Neurological Assessment Center, I think is the full name. And it's a QEEG. Brain mapping, brain scan.
Okay.
So yeah, definitely go research it and check it out. I'm sure you've heard of Dr. Ammon. Is that, am I saying his name correctly?
I don't think I have.
He's very all over the internet and about autism, but he also kind of has pioneered in this region, I guess, or I don't know what to call it, this scientific area. And I think that it was kind of learning through him and watching some videos that I thought, well, maybe this could help me kind of find out how I fit in with my family so well. That was my question. Was how can I be so understanding?
Yeah. What a beautiful thing that you do fit in with your family.
Yeah.
So here is my distractibility. What is the thing that you have bobbing up and down in the jar behind you? Is that a real live thing or is it a fake thing?
It is a fake thing. They are jellyfish. They are bioelectric jellyfish.
But they're not real.
Yeah, they're not real, but aren't they fascinating?
I'm fascinated by everything that you're saying, but I'm watching those jellyfish.
They're really exciting.
That's my distractibility. Okay, so we're totally out of time, but I'm keeping you a couple of minutes later because we haven't gotten through everything. Let's talk a little bit about if people want to know more about you, if they want to know more about your journey, if they want to be listening to the podcast, and if they want to be on the list to know more about the 1 in 44 summit, where are we going for all that?
Okay, so I'll give you a couple places. My sjchilds.org. is my website, simple, and that's easy to find me on all. You can find all the social media platforms there as well. I'm on all the social media platforms so that you can go. I not really have a presence on Twitter, so everything but that really. And you can also just Google Sarah Bradford / autism. Otherwise, an English woman pops up with an H. Or SJ Childs. You can Google SJ Childs and just pages of interviews and the show. The SJ Childs Show is what it's called, bringing value to families through education and resources.
Okay. And is there a specific time that new episodes drop or?
I try to be pretty good about every Tuesday. I air an episode. Sometimes I do 1 to 4 a week, depending on, I'm trying to kind of, I once again did like 65 episodes in my first 3 months. And so I had way too many to just catch up to. So now I'm trying to get all of these episodes out and making sure everybody has their fame, you know, 5 minutes of fame on my show. It's fantastic.
I love it. And obviously you're on Instagram because Amanda said she just followed you on Instagram.
Yes. Thank you, Amanda. Absolutely. And on TikTok, my husband actually set me up on TikTok. He brought me, I don't know how he did it. He's never been in social media in his life. And I just set him loose one day, and 3 months later, I had over 10,000 followers. So I'm trying to get better about getting on there and making videos. I'm still like, you know, an old, I'm still just too old for it, I think, or something. How do you become not too old for it?
I'll tell you, I wish I had your energy. It's just fun for me watching you at this point in the thing. Cause you know, I'm slowly taking myself out because I'm at that point of it, you know, that I'm working towards me not being on camera anymore. I'm sorry, you guys, that's where I'm going. But it's true because I have to start thinking of retirement and, you know, and I want to make sure that when I go, what we started here still exists. But whenever I see it now, I see it without me. And you're at the beginning of the sentence. You're at the very beginning and you're just tearing it up. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited to see all the things that you do and the energy that you are bringing to everything. Remarkable, Sarah.
Oh, I'm so honored to hear that because like I said, you have been a mentor to me, and whether you know it or not, I think that's
super sweet.
The most wonderful thing to have is people to look up to, you know, hope that you can fill their shoes someday type of a thing. So
No, you passed that. You're already past that. You're, like I said, you're overtaking me. So I'm so glad that you're doing all the things that you're doing. Can't wait to hear more about the 1 in 44.
Yeah.
I keep saying I meant to come to Utah and then the pandemic happened because I have so many friends in Utah. I hope that I get to Utah at some point and then we'll get to connect in person.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
But one more time, where's the best place to go to find your stuff?
Just go to sjchilds.org.
Okay. So people can check out the books there. Please check out the podcast. Please stay tuned for more information about the 1 in 44 summit. What are the dates on that, Sarah?
August 12th and 13th of 2022, this year.
There we go. Amazing. So thrilled for you and for your family. And congratulations.
Thank you. On
being a match set.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been amazing. It really has.
I hope that now, because you mentioned that when you were a kid, you just like, it felt like you just couldn't fit in. I hope that being a part of this community feels like you found your tribe.
So much. I can't even tell you. Yeah, definitely. It's a dream come true. It's like a Disney movie. Like it was hard in the beginning and now I have a totally happy ending. So
yeah. Well, and thank you. Rock star. So that's amazing. Leading the way for all of us. I appreciate you so much for being with us. And I'm sorry that we're way out of time.
Oh, that's great to see you again.
It's good to see you too. Give my love to your whole family.
Thank you. All right.
You take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I want to remind everybody that we are back live tomorrow with Dr. Grampy Shea. She is out of the country, but she is going to be with us live tomorrow answering your questions. So you can be sending your questions in now, and we will look forward to seeing you there. And then I haven't talked about this before, but we've started, you know, we've been doing Let's Talk Autism with Shannon and Nancy for 10 years, and we love Nancy, and Nancy is not going anywhere. I want to make sure everybody knows that. But Nancy's got so many other things that she's doing that she's winding down a little bit here too with us. So we're starting a new series that's Let's Talk, and we'll still do once a month Let's Talk Autism with Nancy. But we've got some other programming that's going to be coming that's Let's Talk Other Things. So this Thursday, we're debuting our first episode of Let's Talk Movies. And if you watched our special Oscar episode with Moira Giamatteo, Moira is somebody who's very instrumental over at TACA, which is the Autism Community in Action. She is, I think she's still head of the mentor program over there. She is an amazing wealth of knowledge about biomedical stuff. And so we delight in having her with us, but she is also someone who, like me, is passionate about movies and television and things. And we had such a blast when we did the Oscar show that we've decided that once a month, it will be a show where Moira and I tell you what we're watching. It will always be through the filter of parents of neurodiverse individuals. So we'll keep you posted on autism in the media, but we're going to talk about everything having to do with movies. And she'll also update you and let you know anything that's happening at TACA. But so this Thursday, for the first time, Let's Talk Movies with Moira and Shannon will be debuting, and we'll tell you everything we've been watching lately, because there have been some real woof woof bad dogs, and there's a couple of really amazing things that I know I can't wait to talk with you about. So that's happening on Thursday. And then on Friday, of course, we're still playing our Stories from the Spectrum, because a week from Friday, we're debuting the newest episode of Stories from the Spectrum. Those are just videos that are made entirely by people who are on the spectrum, their perspective only. You won't see me. That's me making that move that I won't be here anymore, but there will still be programming here. Yay. Yay for that. Anyway, so glad that you guys could be with us for this hour. I feel like I learned so much. I hope that you did too. We'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Grampy Shea. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.